It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is Trey. Thank you for joining us for a Thursday edition of our podcast, which is Q&A day, Mary Langston day, whatever you want to call it. It's a day I look forward to because it is a day that I have to think. Not that I don't try to think every day. I do try to. Sometimes it's simply a question of like which miniseries to watch, but so all days aren't equal in terms of thinking, but this is what I look forward to because your questions are very thought-provoking and they're timely and they're relevant and they're probative, and I like it, and I get to talk to Mary Langston, so lots of reasons to like Thursdays.
Hey, Trey, how are you?
I'm alive, so it's certainly better than the alternative. How are you?
Same here. We're here, and like you said, I second everything you said about the questions and how they keep us thinking. And, you know, I always love the sports ones because I don't read as much about that. So I have to learn from you on that. And we do have one today on some sports. So that's exciting as well. But, you know,
that is
the questions keep us thinking.
You mean there's something more important than sports that you would be watching or following?
Well, you know, there's people around and people to talk to. And sometimes I get distracted.
Yeah, well, just tell them to wait until the sporting event is over.
I don't know about that. They may tell me that, but I don't think I could do that.
I doubt that, but well, good. I'll look forward to anything that relates to sports and hopefully not politics, but we shall find out.
We'll start with politics and then we'll...
Oh, we are going to start. Right.
We'll end on a good note with some sports, but we'll start with the politics.
Topic in the world. Great. I can't wait.
All right. Well, we're
sure, I can't write my own obituary. That might be the only thing I would least do.
Well, we can make it short and sweet and start with it, and we'll end on a happy note. Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
All right. Well, we'll start with Bill, who has your political question, and he writes, will the Speaker of the House conflict ever end? And why did it even start happening? He says he's confused by it all.
Oh, my Lord. Not only is that a political question, it's one that, wow. Mm. Well, you know, one of my New Year's resolutions to my wife and my mom was to have extraordinarily clean language.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to keep that New Year's resolution, which I've done a decent job of keeping, and still address Bill's very salient question about what is going on with the House of Representatives. If I heard your question correctly, Bill says he's confused by it all. Is that what he said?
He did say that.
Well, Bill, I'm confused too, but only to the extent that I'm confused or confounded by human nature, because what we're seeing in the House reflects what we see in other parts of life and other people. It's just, to me, our leaders used to be different, or at least act differently. I don't think anyone would argue against the notion that Madison, Jefferson, Adams, Franklin, Washington were extraordinary people of vision and genius. They were imperfect, to be sure. But they were the best among us in terms of intellect. No one even tries to make that argument about people who pursue politics these days. I mean, nobody even tries to make that argument. He asked about the current Speaker of the House conflict. Will it ever end? And then he asked, why did it start? Well, why did it start? It started in January of 2023. When a handful of members wanted to make Kevin McCarthy crawl, they wanted to make him beg for a job. Now, lay aside the fact that Kevin laid aside his life, the planes he was on, the money he raised for other people, the trips he took, the candidates he recruited, all of the things that people who want to be the Speaker of the House do, he did. He had done it multiple times. But the reward for all of that hard work was, you know, just under 24 members decided to make him crawl, to beg for the job. And what he should have said in hindsight was no. He should have walked away then. He's much, much happier now, if that is any consolation to the people that ran him off. Thank you. He is much, much happier. He's been liberated. So he had to start in January, not working against the Democrats, but working against his own party. And he had to make compromises with people who are not trustworthy. So October of last year, when he was defrocked as Speaker, started in January of last year, literally and figuratively. So what you see is anger and retribution, which are among the oldest sins, if you want to use that word, in history. If you are a fan of the book of Genesis, you know, Cain killed Abel, anger. You got Jacob and Esau. You've got retribution and fear of retribution. I mean, it's the same thing that's been plaguing human nature. It plagues politicians. It's just our politicians used to be the best among us, and now they're not. In some cases, they're the worst among us. That's what led Matt Gaetz to file a motion to vacate Kevin McCarthy in the first place. Anger. He was angry at an ethics inquiry. I served under two speakers of the House. I was on ethics under two speakers of the House. Not once ever did a Speaker of the House say one word to me about what to do or not to do on the Ethics Committee. Of all the things that are broken about Congress, and there are many, they are legion. At least when I was there, the Speaker did not involve himself in the House Ethics Committee. So there is zero chance that Kevin McCarthy was going to interfere in an investigation into a member of Congress by the Ethics Committee, especially one alleged to have done the things that Representative Gaetz is alleged to have done. So after you see the anger and the retribution, then you see the rationalization. You see an attempt to excuse or explain the behavior so that others might be fooled. And quite candidly, many members of the media were fooled too. But members of the media don't get to vote on who the Speaker is. Members of the House do. And seven were fooled or beguiled by Matt Gaetz. There were some combination, I guess, of fooled or lured by the prospects of fame. I mean, let's be candid. How else would we know the names of some of the people who voted to get rid of Kevin McCarthy, except for the fact that they voted to get rid of Kevin McCarthy? I mean, they've certainly not done anything else to make us like know what their names would be. Some people covet fame. Some people covet attention. Some people covet relevance. But again, there's a reason that I use the word covet. It's mentioned in like the first list of 10 things not to do. It's as old as human nature is. The way to get things done should be through hard work and character and accomplishment. And I think in some instances it used to be that way, but it's not anymore. Now it's television and it's social media and it's one-liners. And I mean, for a group that talks about the so-called uniparty, that Republicans and Democrats act alike and that they're indistinguishable. It was those eight that sided with the Democrats on the most significant vote of all to get rid of a Republican speaker. 90% of the conference won it. But it was good for fundraising. It was good for their TV time. And it was good for their fame. So what did you get, you may be wondering? You got nothing. McCarthy is gone. Mike Johnson is a wonderful human being. You may like his politics, you may not like his politics, but he is a wonderful human being. The reality is nothing has changed because nothing was going to change. The GOP has a small majority, largely thanks to winning seats in blue states like California and New York. And there are some members who act like the whole country is a ruby red district from Georgia. It's not. It's not a blue district from California. It's not a blue district from New York. And it's not a red district from South Carolina. It's about a 50-50 country. And the difference makers, the majority makers, are in swing districts. And that's the truth, but that's not what you're told. So Mike is doing what Kevin did. But those eight realized that they made a mistake. They made a mistake in getting rid of Kevin. They thought that they would be heralded as heroes, and the house was in utter dysfunction for a month. And now they have buyer's remorse because Mike is doing the exact same thing that Kevin did, but they can't admit that they made a mistake because human nature won't allow folks to admit that they make mistakes. So they do what humans do, which is complain and blame others and project and all the things that Freud wrote about and talk about what they would do if they were in charge, but they won't ever be in charge because they're too scared to run, or they know their colleagues don't respect them enough to vote for them if they did run. You know, a contrast, George Washington could have stayed and he left. That is what great leaders do. They lead before anyone wants them to lead. Not these clowns. They will stay as long as you let them stay. They will move clear across the state to stay in a job they claim they hate. But they won't run for leadership. They stay on the sidelines and complain. I mean, what do you think would happen if Matt Gaetz ran for speaker? I mean, honestly, how many votes do you think you would get from the people who know him best? Two? Maybe? Yeah, one of those I'm not sure about. Nancy Mace, how many votes do you think she'd get? Andy Bix did run. He got waxed. So Congress is like the rest of life. People who don't do the work or the leading criticize those who do. And yet they cannot or will not offer to do the job themselves. So Congress reflects, it reacts. It almost never leads. And right now, many of the members are best known for reflecting the worst that there is in human nature. It didn't used to be that way, but it sure as heck is now.
Well said, Trey, and thank you so much for answering that question. Our next question.
I'm sure you were wishing you hadn't asked that question now, but you did.
We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Our next question is going to take us to law school, and it's from Elizabeth, who writes, why do you say jury selection is more art than science, more psychology than law?
Yeah, I mean, jury selection, there are lots of different ways to select a jury. I did our Tuesday podcast on jury selection just because I find it to be so fascinating. You cannot sum up the full extent of a human being by simply looking at that person. I mean, we've been told since we were kids not to judge a book by its cover. Never is that more true than when you're talking or dealing with people. And what we often have to do, except in death penalty cases. Now, in the federal system, you get a questionnaire. So, I mean, you can tell a little bit about somebody probably by what they do for a living. If someone is a first grade school teacher, chances are they like children. I mean, I don't think you have to be Madame Curie to figure that out. If someone's a pediatrician, chances are they like children. If people do autopsies, chances are they don't like talking to their patients because their patients are dead. So there are certain things you can glean from an occupation, but not a ton. Bumper stickers. I mean, can you glean something from what, and I mentioned those because those were in the questionnaires that we would send to potential jurors in the federal system. In the state system, you knew like name, age, occupation, and what they look like. And so you learn to notice everything. It makes you, I have been accused of having too much of an eye for detail, which is, I have been accused of that. of obsessing over details. You have to. If you draw juries for a living, you have to. Is the person the first or last to stand up when the judge says it's time to take the oath? Is the person talking to neighbors while the judge is addressing the entire jury panel? Is the person asleep? How is the person sitting? How are they dressed? I mean, jury service is not, you know, you don't have to wear a coat and tie, but probably shouldn't wear a tank top either. So it is reading people, which is not law. I mean, there are certain laws that apply to, you can't strike someone based on race, age, or gender. But beyond that, it is simply the ability to look at someone. I did it, you know, in a class recently that Sharia and I teach together. We teach a class full of young people. And I literally went down the row. You get about a second. All right. You have on a camouflage hat. You're probably a hunter. You're probably a Second Amendment guy. You'd be a good juror for me if I was in a homicide case. You play lacrosse. It was a young woman who played lacrosse. That's great. Tells me she's tough, not afraid of pain. But on the other hand, she had the word liberty on her shirt. Liberty is not a word prosecutors like in potential jurors. We like incarceration, not liberty. But you have to do that in split seconds. The old adage was you don't see people with facial hair. I mean, how ridiculous does that seem now? That's what they told us when I was coming along. Don't see people with facial hair. That means I couldn't have Tom Selleck on my jury. And I wanted to have Tom Selleck on my jury. I couldn't have Ron Burgundy from Anchorman because he had a stash. Ricky Fowler, a golfer I like, every now and again has a stash. So where did that come from? Not to see people with facial hair, but you're trying to size up 30, 40, 50 years of someone's existence in an instant to determine whether or not they could be a fair member of the jury. And that's why I say it is art. The ability to read people is an art. I was very lucky that I got to watch some really talented prosecutors draw juries and kind of focus from the moment those potential jurors walked into the room into the moment they were picked. In total, it takes about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. The things that these good prosecutors would look for in those 2.5 hours is and was art. It's just pure art. You can't teach it. They tried to teach me. It's innate. The ability to read people that quickly is a gift. So that's why I say jury selection. Like almost every major trial I did, there was a jury selection expert on the other side. I mean, there are people who do it for a living. They advise defendants on who to pick for, particularly for death penalty juries. It's called a jury consultant. I never used one. I never had one. It's just, can you read people or can you not? And, you know, Mary Langston, you have a million great qualities. Your ability to read people is probably pretty good, but if you were going to make a mistake, you would make a mistake on the over-inclusion side. You would tend to think more people were good than not good. You agree with that or don't agree with that?
I do. I would say that's a fair assessment of myself. Yes, sir.
Right, because you're a good person like Terry and others. Y'all want to see the best in people. And to be able to pick a jury, I'm not doing a good job of explaining why it is more art than science and more psychology than law. But Elizabeth, it is, whoever said that is right. It is both. Mm-hmm. It is art and psychology. It is not science and law.
Well, well said, Trey. And that's fascinating because when you look at it as an outsider, as someone that doesn't know that much about the law system, you would think that it was more about science and law. versus the other two. So thank you for explaining that on Tuesday and then also today.
It is the same way you read walking into a department store and there are three people that work in that department and you instinctively have a sense of which one to go to for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an innate sense of reading people, and it's probably a gift for people that have it. I don't know. Probably every death penalty case I did, there was a jury consultant on the other side. And I'm not saying they didn't help, but they didn't help enough because the defendants never won. So maybe there is a cottage industry of helping know what to look for. I think life teaches you what to look for.
Well, well said, Trey, and you're right. It is a gift. And thank you for answering that. Thank you, Elizabeth, for that thoughtful question. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back. Our next question is from Lee from Texas, who writes, what was your favorite job and why?
Oh, that's easy. Being a prosecutor, federal and state. I enjoyed the federal system more in terms of how it works and how it's run, but I enjoyed the cases in the state system more, because you can help more people in the state system given the category of cases. Obviously, 99% of violent crime is prosecuted in the state system. So if you want to help people that have been victimized, that's the system you need to be in. But no doubt, being prosecutor was number one. You know, Congress would have been the least enjoyable of the different jobs I've had. Right now, I'm lucky as I can be because I got a couple of different jobs and I enjoy every one of them. I love that Fox lets me do television. That's an awesome opportunity that they afford me on Sunday evenings. I love doing these podcasts. I love the one with you more than the one where I have to sit there and listen to myself, but I love doing both of them. Sometimes on Tuesdays, I get to interview people I otherwise would never have a chance to talk to. I get to write. I mean, I write books. I love that. Working on a crime book right now. Teaching, just, you know, left Wofford College with Sharia. I don't get to do that as much as I wanted to. I love public speaking, you know, trying to see if you can get folks to laugh and think and reflect and show emotion all in one 30-minute segment. So I'm really lucky with the jobs that I have right now because I love every one of them. And I really feel sorry for my friends that are still in politics.
Well, thank you so much for answering that one. And thanks, Lee, for that fun question. Our last question is our sports one, is from Angie in North Carolina, who writes, what did you think of Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda winning again?
I think it is mind-boggling. They are consistently beating the best players in the world on a regular basis. I mean, Nelly Korda may have the best golf swing on the planet. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm not a golf instructor, but I know what aesthetically a great golf swing should look like. Nelly Korda may have the best golf swing on the planet. And Scottie Scheffler, for all he does on the course, you know, he's won, what, like 4 out of the last 5 tournaments and had a putt to make the playoff in the one he didn't win. And one of those was a major. Nelly Korda's won, what, 5 in a row? One of the ones she won was a major. The thing I'll say about Scheffler, for all of what he does on the course, I've never met him, but one of these days I hope I get to. I've got friends that know him, and from what I can see and from what they tell me, he's an even better person off the golf course than he is a golfer on the golf course. What they're doing right now is historic. I mean, they are doing stuff. I think Nelly Korda tied Annika Swornstam and Nancy Lopez for 5 in a row. And Scheffler, you know, anytime people are like mentioning Nicklaus and Tiger Woods in the same sentence with your name, you're doing something. So it's really fun to be alive and watch it. And I don't mean to like not say Scottie Scheffler has a good golf swing. His golf swing, you would not teach it. The way his feet move, you would never teach that. Nelly Korda's golf swing, like, would be what a robot did if you had artificial intelligence that said, hey, go show me the perfect golf swing. It would be hers. But Scheffler, short game, and he, you know, figured his putting out. It's been amazing. Angie from the great city of North Carolina, it's been amazing to watch.
I think I saw a video of maybe Nelly doing a cannonball in maybe a pond or something on the course.
Yes, that's the tradition.
Tradition? Okay.
Well, for sure, there's another tournament where there's a tradition you jump in the pond. I did not know that that was a tradition at Chevron, but she did it. And but that whole, her whole family is a family of athletes. Her mom and dad played professional tennis. Her brother is a professional tennis player, and her sister is a professional golfer. So, you know, it's the whole family. I mean, I'm glad she did a cannonball. I wouldn't want her diving into a pond where she didn't know how deep it was, but she probably could have done a swan dive as good of athletes as they are in that family.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, those are all the questions we have for today, Trey. Thank you.
Well, we ended on a high note. We started on a low note with the Speaker of the House, which is just the most depressing thing in the world. But
it is pretty sad.
But I will say this, Kevin McCarthy is extraordinarily happy. I talk to him on a regular basis. You know, I tried to get him to leave before he left.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Telling him, you got to get out. But he stayed, and then he ultimately did leave, and he's incredibly happy. And it's a really, really hard job. It was a hard job when Boehner had like a 40-person majority, and now they're down to, what, one or two? It's just, I don't, people have a right to be critical if they want to, but at a certain point, you got to get out of the stands and go get in the arena. And I just don't hear the people complaining the most offering to run themselves. So you got to ask yourself why. And the why is because they wouldn't win. But we won't go back through that again. We'll end on a happy note. I hope all of you, each of you, has a great week. And we'll get back together again, God willing, next week.
That sounds great. We'll see y'all next Thursday. Keep sending us your questions.
That's right. Keep them coming. That was a song way before you were born. I can't remember who sang it, but that was a song. I'll have to figure that out. Maybe somebody will ask me and give me a reason to go research it.
Yeah, you'll have send it to me.
You take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.